And I just want to say this about this prison system. Everything I say is about the prison system, either the one distinctly set aside or the one out here in which we live. Make no mistakes about that, you know. But this other one, this one that we set aside and we label it the penitentiary, all of this talk about how do you deal with rehabilitation when you focus on the adult penitentiaries, you're looking at the end of the line to try to see where a process begins. Because if you really want to understand and see what's behind this prison system, you have to look at juvenile hall. You have to go down to juvenile hall. And that's where I started my career. At about the age of 12, for some charge, I don't know what it was, vandalism. I think I ripped off a bicycle. Maybe two or three bicycles. Maybe I had a bicycle business, I don't remember, you know. But it related to bicycles. And they took me to juvenile hall, and it took me about 6 months to get out again. But while I was there, I met a lot of people. I met a lot of real nice, groovy cats who were very active, very healthy people who had stolen bicycles and things like that. And I moved up the ladder from juvenile hall to Whittier, the reform school for youngsters. I graduated from there with honors and went to another one a little higher, Preston School of Industry. And I graduated from that one and they jumped me up into the big leagues, into the adult penitentiary system. But I noticed that every time I went back to jail, the same guys who were in juvenile hall with me were also there. Or they arrived there soon after I got there, or a little bit before I left. But they always seemed to make the scene. They carry you from juvenile hall to the old folks' colony down in San Luis Obispo, which is across the tracks from where Huey P. Newton is. They take you in to juvenile hall, they carry you through their system, and they take you down to San Luis Obispo and wait for you to die shortly, and they bury you there if you have no one left out here to claim your body. And most people who end up there don't. And I noticed these waves, these generations. And I had a chance to watch other generations that came behind me. And I talked to them, you know. And I'd ask them, had they been in jail before and where did they start? I want to know their story. And you will find graduating classes moving up from juvenile hall all the way up. And it occurred to me that this is a social failure at the root, one that cannot be justified by any stretch of the imagination. Not by any stretch of the imagination can the little children in the juvenile halls be condemned because they're innocent and they're processed by an environment that they have no control over. If you look at the prisons, the adult prisons, you can't make heads or tails of them. You can't make heads or tails of that because by the time they get there, they're there for murder, rape, robbery, and all of the high crimes. But when you look into their past, you'll find juvenile hall, and you have to ask yourself, why is there not in this country a program for young people that will interest them, that will actively involve them, and that will process them to be healthy individuals in a healthy environment and lead a healthy life? And until someone answers that question for me, the only attitude that I can have towards the prison system, including juvenile hall, is how do we tear the walls down and let those people out of there? That's the only question. How do we tear those walls down and let those people out of there? People look at the point in the Black Panther Party program that calls for freedom for all black men and women held in federal, state, county, local jails. And they find it hard to accept that particular point. They can relate to running the police out of the community, but they say those people in those prisons, they've committed crimes, they're convicted of crimes, and how can you even talk about bringing them out? If you did get them out, would you and the black community take them and put them on trial and send them back again? And I don't know how to deal with that. It just, no. Let them out and leave them alone. Let them out because they're hip to all of this out here now. Let them out, turn them over to the Black Panther Party. Give them to us and we will redeem them from the promises made by the Statue of Liberty and that was never fulfilled. We have a program for them that will keep them active 24 hours a day. And I don't mean 8 big strong men in a big conspicuous truck robbing a jive gas station for $75. When I sit down to conspire to commit a robbery, it's going to be the Bank of America or Chase Manhattan Bank or Brinks. Listen, I've been working with Bobby Seale working on the biography of Huey P. Newton. Bob Shearer and I took Bobby Seale down to Carmel by the sea, but away from the sea. We went as far away from there as we could get. We went into a little cabin, and we got a fifth of scotch, a couple of chasers, and a tape recorder, and a large stack of blank tapes. And we said, Bobby, take a sip and talk about Brother Huey P. Newton. And Bobby started talking about Huey. And one of the things that just blew my mind is when he mentioned that prior to organizing the Black Panther Party, he and Huey had been planning a gigantic bank robbery. And that as they put their minds to work on that, because they were relating to the movement, and they recognized that they needed money for the movement, because the people were giving all the money to the churches, you dig it? And to the Democratic Party and to the Republican Party. So they knew that they needed money, and they knew that they had money in the bank, so they sat down and they started trying to put together a key to open the vaults. But as they thought about it, and as they thought about the implications, Bobby tells how one day, while they were discussing this, Huey jumped up and said, later for a bank, what we're talking about is politics. And what we're talking about essentially is the liberation of our people. So later for one jive bank, let's organize the brothers and put them together, arm them for defense of the black community, and it will be like walking up to the White House and saying, stick them up, motherfucker, we want what's ours. So that there's a very interesting, there's a very key connection between insurrection carried out by oneself, a private, you know, a personal civil war. We define civil war, what, when society splits down the middle and you have two opposing sides? And does that have to be the definition? Can 5,000 people launch a civil war? Can 4,000 or 3,000 or 2 or 1 or 1/2 of 1,000 or half of that? Or can 10 people do that? Or can one person engage in civil war? I'm not a lawyer. And I'm definitely not a judge. But I would say that one person acting alone could in fact be engaged in a civil war against an oppressive system. And that's how I look upon those cats in those penitentiaries. Robbery, burglary, rape, murder, kidnap, anything. A response to a situation. A response to an environment. If you read any of the social sciences, read a book, and it would tell you that if you subject people to an unpleasant environment, you can predict that they will rebel against it. It's predictable. And that gives rise to a contradiction. Because when you have a social unit organized in such a way that people are moved to rebel against it in large numbers, how then do you come behind them and tell them that they owe a debt to society? I say the society owes a debt to them. And society doesn't look as though it wants to pay.